Recording has started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the 15th GNSO ePDP team meeting taking place on the 20th of September 2018 at 1300 UTC. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you were only on the telephone bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no one, we have listed apologies from Aiden Federline of the NCSG, Emily Taylor of the RRSG, and Krista Spain, ICANN Board Liaison. They have formally assigned Tatiana Tropina and Lindsay Hamilton-Reed as their alternate for this call in any remaining days of absence. During this period, the members will have read-only rights and no access to conference calls. Their alternates will have posting rights and access to conference calls until the members' return date. As a reminder, the alternate assignment form must be formalized by the way of the Google assignment form. The link is available in the agenda pod to your right-hand side. Statements of interest must be kept up to date. If anyone has any updates to share, please raise your hand or speak up now. Seeing or hearing no one, if you need assistance updating your statements of interest, please email the GNSO Secretariat. All documentation and information can be found on the ePDP Wiki space. There is an audio cast and view only Adobe Connect room for non-members to follow the call. Please remember to state your name before speaking. Recordings will be circulated on the mailing list and posted on the public Wiki space shortly after the end of the call. Thank you. I'll now turn this back over to our chair, Kurt Pritt. Please begin.
Thanks very much, Terry, and thanks everyone for being here for a timely start. Here's the agenda. I have maybe one or two comments to make at the start, so that'll go very fast. I'd like to cover three things during this meeting. One is to review and discuss the draft agenda for the meeting in Los Angeles. Second, this one will be time permitting, but in our last meeting, we discussed the legitimate purposes of registration data matrix. And in that exercise, we were just going through where new purposes were added through comments, and we had gotten through 4.4.10. So just for that narrow agenda item and to get us launched for the LA meeting, I'd like to finish off those three. And then, we've endeavored to discuss Appendix A for several meetings and not got through it. Some people have commented on it already, but I think we need to have and others have mentioned we need to have a discussion in this meeting about it first. So I want to discuss that. So that's the agenda for this meeting. Are there any comments to it? All right, hearing none, as they say. The only updates I have for team chair are two. One is we had a GDPR training session with Becky Burr that I thought was very beneficial yesterday, but several members of this team haven't completed their initial training. And that's sort of a shame to me. So if you would... I'll tell you what, we'll send the link back out to those that didn't complete the training, so it's really easy to find, so you can do that. So please do that. The second thing I want to mention is that, as you know, the company CBI will be helping us in the Los Angeles meeting. So I wanted to let you know that David Plum, Gina Bartlett, and Tony Berkman were in the room, I think. So. There's Gina. So they'll be able to respond directly to any questions you might have during this meeting. So those are the only updates I have. We'll get into the timeline that, shows us almost halfway done with the time allotted for the exercise we have and halfway home to the Barcelona meeting. I think we've worked on this for 7 weeks now. So with regard to the LA meeting, my thought and what I've heard from others too, so I want to really hear from you on this, is that we should keep the number of topics few and finish those topics or make substantial progress on those. So essentially the three meeting topics I have are, first, and this is sort of a brief, 90 minute or so opening to the meeting, is I want to discuss, what we think our final product looks like. I still receive emails regarding whether we're redlining the spec or creating a policy or what the final form of our output should be. Given the time constraints, I think that we should agree upon what the table of contents, say, would look like for the policy we're creating, so that it has the minimum elements required to, let everybody go on with their operating lives, go on to the next step as soon as possible, which is an access discussion. So I'd like you to, I'll create, my vision for this, but I'd like you to think about that going in. And I think, the icebreaker topic for our meeting will probably be, a couple one-on-one discussions. We'll break into, pairs and have informal chats about what we think that will be. Then I think the two major tasks for us are, first, completing the purposes matrix that Thomas and Benedict put together. And, we're developing ways to march through that, but any input you have about finishing that would be great. So that's only two lines in the in this meeting topic slide, but probably the most important one. And getting through that would mark this meeting as a success, I think. And then secondly, the data elements themselves, which data can be legally collected, so which data will be collected going forward and which will be redacted. So, and that redacted part is part of Appendix A. So, and we'll take, as discussed, we'll take into account the life cycle of data elements and the handling of data disclosure to various parties and such. So I just have a couple more slides on this. So this slide got really big. Let me make it a little bit smaller. So I just wanted to make reference to the, in this slide, to the charter questions associated with these things. So the charter questions on the left are those that have to do with the purposes of for processing registration data, and the ones on the right have to do with data collection. And there's a few more of these charter questions with regard to data collection in BD&E, the CD&E sets of charter questions, which really have to do with sharing the data with others, so escrow providers and the like. So those are the charter questions. So that's here's the first day's agenda. But I'm gonna pause there and take comments on the agenda. First, my questions to you would be: is that about the right amount of material? Keeping the number of topics small. And then second, is it not just the right amount, but are they the right topics? And then any refinements or comments will be welcome. Does anybody want to comment on the agenda? Thanks, Thomas.
Hi, Kurt. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Maybe you have this somewhere, but I guess that we really need to work through the various processing steps and establish the legality of all those processing steps. We might have a different purpose for collection than we have for disclosure. We might have different purposes for passing on data between registrars and registrants. There might be yet different purposes for sending that data to escrow agents or the bureau. And all these processing activities need to be associated with a legal basis. So I'm not sure whether the bullet points that just spell out the headings of what we have to do are sufficiently granulated to allow for the group to do exactly those tests. I think it would be good for the group to have an agenda that is more granulated. And for full transparency, Farani and I, we have taken home an action item a couple of meetings back to work on a refined approach to our test, and we've actually come up with a more elaborated data matrix that specifies all those steps that need to be assessed and that also associates these processing steps with the chartering questions. And I think if we take that as a basis, and it's currently with Kurt and staff, then I think that would be a roadmap to allow for the whole group to go through the process in a fashion that allows us to really put check marks on all the processing activities for the legality. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Thomas. And to let everybody know, Thomas and Fuzzy worked on an elaborate meaning in a complementary way of looking at the data and analyzing the different uses to which it could be put during its life cycle. And so I want to follow up with them, and anyone's welcome to join. So, but we'll have to do that rather quickly to try to take that whole set of spreadsheets and develop some way of looking at them so we can get through all the questions associated with them. So thanks. So I guess the agenda would stay focused on overall goals, but we'd want to show a plan for accomplishing that shows working through that detail. So thanks, Thomas. Georgios?
Yes, hello everybody. Thank you, Kurt. I just wanted to say whether at a certain point you believe in Los Angeles we will talk about the accuracy of data. As stipulated by the EU data protection in line with the obligations of the contracted parties and the references to rely on, personal data shall be accurate and kept up to date. So I'm wondering whether this belongs to the discussion of the first day or somewhere else. Are we going at a certain point discuss this? Because I think this is a point that will have a lot of discussion because there is a certain burden to have accurate and up-to-date data. I was wondering whether you foresee this for this part or not at all for the Los Angeles discussion. Thank you.
Yeah, so Georgios, you weren't quite as clear. There was some distortion, but if you're talking about accuracy of data, that's not currently on the agenda. And I think the reason for that is, as Thomas just alluded to, that we want to determine the data elements themselves first that are going to be collected, and then which data elements are going to be displayed. And then I think after that we would get to the accuracy portion. And I think this might be part of the discussion about what has to be in the initial report and not. So maybe we could take that topic up in a broad sense during that part of the discussion. So thanks very much for that comment. Alex?
Thanks, Kurt. It's Alex. So I look forward to seeing the updated matrix and spreadsheet from Thomas and others. I think that will be very helpful moving forward, given the work we need to do. I would also suggest that during the LA meeting, we've talked about this, but we work vertically through the matrix, and suggest that we, instead of simply debating whether an X or not should be there, but we actually place the text. For example, the registrars have already listed their purposes in James's red line, I think it's what we've been calling it. We simply put that text into the cells for the registrar column, if you will, and then we give homework to the registries to do something similar for their purposes for processing, and that text go into the column for registries, and then the next column would be ICANN purposes. I think on the call yesterday with Becky, it was suggested perhaps Dan or someone could assist in detailing what those purposes would be, and then they would be listed in that column. And then we could talk about third-party interests and purposes. So I think that just thinking about, you know, how we make progress in the LA meeting, I think that would be a useful step in the process that we've been discussing. So I just wanted to put that out there. Thank you.
Great, Alex. Thank you very much. And I had a very similar comment via email from another member of the team yesterday. So I think that's it. So Marika and Kaylin, could we take two actions out of that? One is one would be let's distribute the work that Thomas and Farzi did on the spreadsheets, you know, right now, right after this meeting. So everybody can see them. I want to work on a way to make that discussion manageable because there's so much to discuss. But everybody's should see this work in any event, and sooner is better than later. So if you would do that, and then let's write down that methodology that Alex said, and then determine how to send it out in the form of so-called homework. Margie.
Thanks, Kurt. This is Margie. A couple things. I agree with the request to include accuracy as part of the discussion in LA, since that's a very important part of compliance with GDPR. And I think it'll come up when we talk about the purposes, because one of the purposes relates to providing accurate information. So it certainly fits in line with what we proposed here for Los Angeles. I also want to make a formal request that ICANN staff be represented vocally and participate in Los Angeles. I think it's important to have Dan Halloran as the data protection officer for ICANN really participate and help share ICANN's perspective on the data and the purposes and how the information is used. Because in the prior calls, we've talked about ICANN's purposes and how it's used, but I think it's more effective to have ICANN staff actually participating actively in Los Angeles. And I believe Chris Despain suggested that we make a formal request for that last week, and I'd like to go ahead and make that request now.
Okay, and actually I spoke to Chris about that too. So let's write, hi Dan, how you doing? So we'll write a note to ICANN immediately after this meeting, and Dan and his colleagues can decide how best to staff that. And then I think we probably, I don't know if this is premature, but it wouldn't be bad to have somebody from compliance there too when we talk about ICANN purposes and the data that's required. So I would include that in the request unless somebody on the team here thinks it's not appropriate. Thanks, Milton.
Good day, everyone. My understanding is that right now we are going over the agenda for the Los Angeles meeting. And I'm wondering whether we couldn't actually resolve this question of what does look like here today on the call, and then focus our efforts on adjusting the agenda to take account of the procedures that are being proposed, whether it's a temp spec redlining, whether it is answering the chartering questions, or the more elaborate approach proposed by Thomas and Farzi. Do you understand my question? Is like, can we just get
yep. This
not nerdy thing off the agenda right now, right today?
we can talk about it for, you know, 15 minutes or so. I do want to get to the other agenda items, but the queue seems to I'm going to call on Cavus right after you, Milton, and then how about I come back to you and you can kick off that discussion, and then we'll see how it goes. And even in the worst case, we might be able to chop off, you know, a majority of the time we're going to allot to that or make it much more efficient. So if you'll indulge me to hear Cavus' comment, and then I'll come back to you.
Yes. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everybody. With respect to the ICANN purpose, I have no difficulty that you ask ICANN board or anyone from the board representative to further enlighten us, but I don't think that there is a need that they rewrite ICANN purpose. ICANN purpose was already in the bylaw under the mission and part of that on the core value, because some people at the time of the new bylaw did not agree some element to be in the mission. They said that mission should be very, very high level and then transfer that to the core value. So if it is some quotation from the mission and core value, I have no difficulty. But if there is a starting, a new drafting, what is the ICANN purpose, I have difficulty. I don't think that we have such a mandate to draft ICANN purpose here. And I don't know what some other people are doing. I have no problem with the division of the works as Thomas proposed, ICANN purpose, registrar purpose, registered purpose, third-party purpose, but I have difficulty to rewrite the purpose of the ICANN by somebody, no matter how that person is qualified. And number two, I don't know, I'm not aware of what Thomas and Farzana produce, where that and what they produce, how many people produce how many things, and where they are going to merge. So we have so many channels, so many people working on so many things. How we should follow all these things. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. And the latter is a challenge. And when looking at the work that Thomas and Farzi did, I recognize it's deep, and I'm trying to think about how to simplify that. And with respect to your first comment, I think, you know, the greater ICANN purpose and ICANN purpose as described in the bylaws or mission should not be changed or debated. But I think as it translates into this meeting agenda, it's how it goes down into the how that translates down into purposes for specific data elements or which data elements are required to fulfill that purpose. So I think that's the sort of detailed discussion, but we're not going to debate the broader ICANN purpose. So with regard to Milton's request, I want to go back and go through my experience a little bit. That I came into this thinking that the fastest way home was to sort of redline the temporary specification and release that so we could get into the next discussion topics. But after the triage portion of our discussion and talking to many of you and, talking to some of the GNSO people that wrote the charter, came to the realization that our product can be markedly different and laid out differently than the temp spec. And also our discussion showed that, there's some critical elements that need to be in our product. I think, the purposes of registration data and the data that's collected, the data that's redacted, things like that. So there's some elements that are required, but, we also identified that if some elements slip by, that if we choose not to use meeting time or our time to discuss right now how UDRP or URS is accomplished, but they're being accomplished, so that discussion could happen after the initial report, that wouldn't be so bad. It's more important to talk about the necessary things. So the purpose of this initial topic in the meeting in Los Angeles is to discuss you know, what are the necessary parts of the initial report so that, you know, we can get sufficient comment and we can get sufficient comments on these and move forward and do, you know, complete our work and then have another comment period and have all the necessary comments. So I want to have an initial report that's complete enough that has the necessary parts that we can submit that for public comment and then get enough input so that we can finish our work. So I'm going to, with that sort of background, I'll go back to Milton. And thanks for starting this, Milton.
Yeah, so I think you just stated, your roadmap or victory list, I think we might all be able to agree on that. I think we might have some more discussion about how to get there. I think we can avoid spending an additional hour and a half in Los Angeles on those questions. So you just changed the slides, but can you go back to the agenda proposal? I just want to – yes, thank you. So clearly, I think you have them in the right order here. We have to first do legitimate purposes, then we have to relate that to the data elements, and we have to agree on what we're going to redact in public who is, and we have to agree on something on retention. Does anybody not agree that that's what it looks like in terms of our initial report? I'm just trying to say we can probably resolve that now, maybe within this arbitrary 15-minute time limit even, and take that stuff off of the agenda in Los Angeles and move forward with the more substantive stuff. Does anybody disagree with those required components?
Alan? Unless you want to manage the queue, Milton.
Thank you very much, Alan Greenberg speaking. I don't see any of those that we could omit and really have a substantive report to deliver in Barcelona. And to add anything, I think, would be dreaming in technicolor. So I would be delighted to agree on that and cross our fingers and toes and see if we can actually get it done. Thank you.
As my boss once told me, crossing our fingers and toes is not a strategy. Anyone else? Amr?
Thanks, Kurt. This is Amr. Just a question, really. Do these bullets, in your views and the views of everyone else, also include the required processing activities of registration data? I'm not sure where they would fit in here. I can see some of the bullet points maybe refer to some of the processing pieces, but I'm not sure if they cover all of them. So when you folks are doing your good work in LA, just want to make sure that you don't drop any of the processing activities that need to be covered and matched to purposes. Thanks.
So could you list a few of those processing activities? Because I have a comment, but I just want to make sure I'm directing my comment the right way.
Well, I think they're comprehensively listed in part two, I think it was. The required data processing activities, and then they're divided on, you know, different activities by the registrar. Registrar to registry, data escrow, you know, so I think they're listed from A to down to I or J. So they're all listed in the charter. I think they're all listed under part two. So just a note to make sure that none of these sort of slip through the cracks when you're going through this exercise. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I think... We need to take into account those processing activities to the extent that they identify needed data elements. So in order to identify the needed data elements, we have to look at each one of those processing activities to make sure that we've identified all the elements. So I think that's right, and I think we could not do without that. Cavus, do you have a comment?
Yes, I'm sorry. I see here on the chat somebody referred to CBI master plan. What that master plan is? You can have master plan, but not CBI. What is master plan? Please, thank you.
I don't know. Master plans are usually great big things. So, you know, it's certainly not a term I've used. You know, CBI is working alongside us to run the meeting and identify areas where, you know, we might break off a discussion topic or to help us narrow issues and, you know, more generally use mediation facilitation techniques to drive the topic forward in an expeditious way. So there's not a master plan. There's a plan to, you know, augment the leadership and support teams here with coordination so that we can more smartly move forward. Does that answer your question, Caboose, or do you want me to get you some more elaboration?
No, it did not. It means that these 29 people, all of them high qualified except me, they don't know what coordination is. And three people coming and they want to teach us what the coordination is, how we proceed with the coordination, and so on and so forth. Still, I'm not convinced that. Still, I'm not convinced. All of you except me are high qualified experts on the subject. I don't understand this guidance from the CBI to channel our coordination, to channel our discussion, to channel our argumentation. I don't understand it at all. I'm not convinced. I'm not against, but I'm not convinced. I'm sorry. I apologize before.
That's okay. Alan?
Thank you. It's Alan Greenberg speaking. May I suggest that we proceed with the plan if an hour or 6 hours into the meeting in Los Angeles we feel the CBI people are a waste of time and are distracting us from the real work, we'll say so. Let's give it a try. Thank you.
No, of course. All right. Thank you, Alan. All right. Leon, I'll back in. So I think we have an agreement here, which is very good. The reason I thought this might require more discussion is I want to flesh out, you know, sub bullets or details under each one of these. You know, the issue Abba brought up is an excellent example of that. So we'll redo the agenda, and actually, given this direction, we'll refine it a bit to make sure all of these things are included in it in a more specific way. Are there any more comments about the agenda for Los Angeles? I would appreciate any of you contacting me or anybody on the team with other advice or input with regard to this meeting in whichever way you feel comfortable. So finally, let's talk about the agenda for the rest of this meeting. So there's two items on the agenda. One is the remaining sections of 4.4, where comments have introduced additional purposes, and I wanted to talk about the last three elements of that. But we have not discussed at all, and is on the agenda for LA, Appendix A, and some of you have participated in the comments on the discussion topics on Appendix A. Would it make more sense to go to Appendix A, because we can probably accomplish quite a bit there, given that we're just about a half an hour into the meeting. So if you could say green for Appendix A or red for finishing the section 4.4, you can vote if you want. So it's green if we want to skip down to the Appendix A discussion, because there's quite a bit of meat there, actually, with all the comments that have been made. Or finish our discussion on 4.4 would be red. Okay, so let's go to Appendix A, and I've added some slides here. It was the slides from a couple meetings ago. So these are the the votes are coming in. Hang on. Anybody else care?
Sorry, can you tell us again what we're voting?
Yeah, do we want to talk about, want to skip over the rest of the discussion, the last three elements in Section 4, which have to do with who's added X's to those columns under registrar, registry, ICANN, and third-party interests, and have them explain them. There were three sections we didn't cover in the last meeting, which was really sort of a warm-up to the LA meeting, or go to Appendix A, which we haven't discussed yet, where many people have already made comments in the forum that's been established by the support team, and where some people have asked for discussion before the meeting. So we're already taking up too much time with this. But Milton, do you want to make a comment before I go ahead? It'd be appreciated.
I'm sorry. I'm still looking for a simple yes or no that we're voting on.
Or what to discuss next, Appendix A or Section 4.4?
Okay, let me consult with people.
Pardon?
Thank you, Kurt. Faizana speaking. So I was surprised to see Appendix A, especially the access part on the agenda. And then when I raised the issue on the mailing list, it was said that because we are like picking two for each of the for each of the meeting. And well, the thing is that not to be too critical, but the problem with our approach of going section by section, appendix by appendix, is that we are not giving attention to the gating questions that have to be answered in the charter until we go to the access part. And Appendix A has access. Now, I am not saying that we should not talk about access. At any point, we should definitely talk about access, and at any time that the groups feel like that there should like there are some concerns that something will not be considered and access will not be given, they should say this concern at any point. But then for us, the gating questions are important. So I think we need a really more holistic approach to looking at the temp spec, and instead of going section by section, we should look at the question. And we have not answered the gating questions, so we cannot really go to section J about access. Now, if we are like working on like this master document that we are answering all sorts of questions on the document, then I don't. You can disagree with me, but I don't see a problem. But now I don't think. But maybe it's too late now. But I don't think Appendix A we should discuss it now, especially the parts that are bad.
Thanks, Farzi. Without getting too much into it, you know, there's a section in Appendix A that talks about reasonable access, and so we've got to replace that language with something. So let's go to finish this purposes for processing registration data, and there's the links to the material, but we'll put the pertinent web page up, and the better link is under B. That's the chart we're looking at. And for reference, when we get through this, we'll have answered these charter questions. But I want to bring your attention to data retention is, I think, a necessary part of this discussion. And so could you guys put up the chart while I take Cavus's question?
Hello, can I proceed?
Yes.
Yes. Kurt, we are happy, satisfied with the way you proceeding. We don't want to change. And what was said, it has been said many, many times, and there is no agreement on that. That view is respected by non-commercial stakeholder group, and maybe by one or more, but it is not agreed by others. At least as far as I know, in the GAC, we don't share the same views. That you should put access at the end and apply or reply to the whatever so-called gating question. I don't know gating question, what does it mean? We do not share that views. So we don't want to make such a think at this stage and argue with each other. So we are happy with the way that you proceed, and at the end we have to. We don't want to put access at the end. This is, we have discussed several times in the GAC, and it was mentioned by Ashley, and there was some disagreement between Ashley and Farzaneh, and they said to each other that they have to talk to each other otherwise, and so on and so forth. So something that is no agreement, should be no insistency. Doesn't matter who is right and who is wrong. There is no agreement on this. To separate access totally, I don't think so. I don't share that view. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cavus. And that's that comment taken, so I understand the differences there. So I have this this chart that you see. I actually have the Excel spreadsheet open on my laptop, and I've scrolled down to section 4.4.11, which are providing mechanisms for safeguarding registered name holders registration data in the event of a failure. So comments or X's were added by registrars and registries, but I'm not sure if the registrars and registries did that. Somebody else put those in? Was that Alex or someone else?
Yeah, Kurt, it's Alex. It seemed to me, again, going through this thought exercise, that, you know, this concept of safeguarding safeguarding the registered name holder from these failures could be a registry and a registrar purpose. So I suggested we may want to discuss if that's the case. Again, now it's note that we're talking horizontally now instead of going vertically, as I suggested earlier. But that was my thought.
Right. Okay. Thanks, Alex. And certainly when we flesh out these X's with content, we're going to go, I think the suggestion to go through this vertically is exactly the right approach. Does anybody from the registrar group have a comment on this and that this is a purpose of this data? Or anyone from the registries? Hi, Alan. Thanks.
Sorry, I just needed to connect my microphone there. I'll take a stab at this very quickly, having talked to my colleagues in this one at this moment. But the way I read that instantaneously, my mind goes straight to Ibero, and we're talking about it is a purpose for us to process data to disclose to to escrow in the event that an Ibero event occurs. So, yeah, I mean, I think as a purpose goes, it is when we're specific about it. Yes, I think, you know, the things such as escrow in mind, yes, that is a purpose.
Great, thanks. Anybody from the registrars? I think during our conversation earlier that the registrar said that data comes, that's a different type of data, a different source of data. All right, let's talk about 4.4.12, coordinating dispute resolution services for certain disputes concerning domain names. And so, Alex, again, who was the prolific commenter to this chart, and I'm grateful for that, has indicated that that's an ICANN purpose and purpose determined by third parties. So if you would describe your thoughts there, Alex.
Let me gather my thoughts. Yeah, this is about dispute resolution services. Yeah, so I think again, these are purposes for ICANN and third parties. So I think we need to work on the wording. I think if I remember from James's red line, it was specific to URS and UDRP, but I believe there are other dispute resolution mechanisms that should be considered when we fill out this column. I think that those were my thoughts.
Thanks very much. I think Matt had his hand up earlier. Matt, did you want to comment on that or just let it slide by on the previous section?
Yeah, hey, Kurt, it's Matt. I just put in the chat. I was going to just reiterate that in regard to 4.4.10, I think our view was that was covered under the escrow requirement, so not necessarily needing to be listed as a purpose in this portion. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Malin, is that an old hand?
Sorry, yes, indeed it is.
Christina?
Christina Rosette. Question, I guess, initially to Alex, but also more broadly. There are plenty of places in Section 4.4 where the original temp spec wording, I think, is really broad and vague and capable of a whole lot of meanings. And I think for this PDP in particular, the word choice in our policy recommendations and the word choice in our work product is going to be extraordinarily important, which brings me to my specific question here. What is, Alex, what do you understand coordinating to mean here? Because it has a variety of meanings, and I'm not entirely sure that coordinating is the right word. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Christina. It's Alex. I'm just going through my notes trying to figure out how we responded to the poll questions, because I think we did have a concern about the term coordinating. But let me answer the question a different way. I think again, we have some wording suggested by the registrars for this column. And I think it would be helpful to get the registries also suggest wording for each of the purposes related to registries in that column with suggested wording, and then we could make sure they're consistent. I don't think each of these purposes, horizontally need to be exactly the same. They can be different, but there are some cases perhaps concerning whether it's a coordinating function or or something else, you know, where we want to make sure it is consistent. But it may make sense to just to get wording from you guys for the specific cell, if you will, so we could debate something concrete. But I agree, I think, with your question, is that coordinating may not be the best word there. I just don't know off the top of my head what it should be.
Okay, thanks. And we'll take that as an action item.
Right, and I'm actually not sure whether that was the registrars that came up with that wording, or I think it was actually Thomas. Or maybe Thomas had it broader. Margie?
Hi, it's Margie. Yeah, I don't know where the coordinating language came from, but I think it's trying to describe, you know, if you think about the UDRP and the URF, a lot of players have a role in it. I mean, so, you know, there's ICANN contract with the URS or UDRP provider. There's a policy that talks about, you know, what the registrar role is and all that. And so that's kind of coordination, but I think that's what it's referring to, and certainly open to a different word, and that wasn't my word, but that's the concept, you know, and enabling that whole process to work so that the dispute resolution procedure like the UDRP or URF can actually work, and the domain names, you know, get transferred after, you know, the result comes through, that sort of thing.
Thanks, Margie, and thanks for the clarification you just made, Caboos. One suggestion I have is that what coordinating means will become clear when we talk about specific data elements and all the processing steps or all the uses to which the data is put. So when we discuss how data is used with respect to URS or UDRP or some other mechanism, we have to figure that out. So, you know, coordinating might mean different things for different applications. So I'm not so sure we need to solve this at this stage, because it'll necessarily be solved later, but maybe not. Hadia?
Yes, I just had a question with regard to the suggestion to spell out the uniform rapid suspension or the UDP, the uniform or the UDRP. But why do we need to spell them out? I don't know. Why don't we just keep it certain disputes concerning domain names, whatever they are? So I was just asking about the logic behind spelling them out.
And you think it should be done more broadly for what purpose? What's your rationale for that? I just want to. I'm not disagreeing with you. I just want to understand.
Yeah. But what if we have another mechanism later? Why do we need to narrow it to just those two mechanisms that we have now?
Okay. Thank you. That was a good clarification, Milton.
Yes, I think that's precisely the point that we should be discussing regarding 4.4.12, is the generality versus specificity.
Right.
I support specificity. We have specific domain name resolution dispute processes, general statement in there. You don't have any clear guidance as to what data you should collect or what you should disclose. If your purpose is to facilitate any dispute that might come along, I think that's overly broad, not consistent with ICANN's narrow mission, and potentially troublesome from a legal standpoint. So we need to know, and you read the GDPR, it's very clear that you need to know why you're collecting this data. You need to know, you need to identify those specific purposes. And you can't just say, you know, we're going to collect a bunch of stuff because we think it might be useful for some unspecified thing in the future. So I think it's very clear what way we have to go on 4.12. If ICANN adds a new kind of dispute resolution procedure, let's say they decide to get into marriage and divorce settlements, they will have to change their policies. That's all.
Yeah, and okay, go ahead, Alan. Marja, I assume that's a previous hand?
Actually, I'd like to be in the queue, so just put me after.
Okay, go ahead, Alan.
Thank you. It's Alan Greenberg speaking. Milton just touched on what I was going to ask, although I'm not going to go into marriage disputes. I guess I'd like some understanding of if we are very specific here, and I understand the GDPR certainly suggests that we should be very specific. What happens when we invent a third domain name dispute process? You know, the URS was invented, and we could invent yet another one. How does that impact our ability to now use the data in a way that was not listed when we first collected the data? And I'm not sure I understand what the process is that we could even do that. And I think that level of clarity is important. If we are going to be very specific, then it will be dynamic and change on occasion. And I'm not quite sure of the process. And I guess if some GDPR expert can explain that, I may either have a better level of comfort or a worse one. Thank you.
Aren't there? So I tend to oversimplify things. So I know I'm incorrect here and not understanding the depth of the problem, but you know, aren't there mechanisms in ICANN for developing these new processes, either the policy development process or, a new protection developed in contract negotiations or something like that where, you know, I think in many cases, you know, our work here is taken with this snapshot of GDPR and its implementation the way it is now, and it's going to have to be a dynamic document to accommodate those sorts of things. So I agree with your sentiment exactly. I don't know if it's easy or hard to do that. Margie?
Thanks, Kurt. I think what you're saying is what I was going to say, and I recognize Milton's point about it not being a generic data, you know, dispute resolution process. So maybe it's something like, along the lines of what Alan was suggesting, a dispute resolution process, you know, mandated by ICANN through its policies and procedures. So we know we're talking about specific ICANN dispute resolution processes. And then in order to comply with the specificity required under GDPR, I think we do need to reference URS in UDRP because those are the current ones. Obviously, if those change, then you know as they may change. But if you link this with the ICANN, you know, specified dispute resolution procedures, then I think you get the specificity that makes sure that this isn't too broad.
Okay, great. Alan Woods.
Thank you. So I just put into the. Oh, sorry. Is Alan Greenberg first? Sorry.
I'm willing to go after you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was your previous hand, Alan. No. Go ahead, Alan. So, why don't you start?
Thank you. I wanted to put in, in response to Alan's point. I mean, what we would do in that instance is contact and maybe build in as a recommendation that, you know, as you would find in the GDPR as being a good reference point, that if ever we were to change or to suggest a change, that we would need to undergo a data protection impact assessment. And in that data protection impact assessment, I mean, we don't necessarily need to spell out every single thing of the future, as long as the data protection impact assessment gives us the comfort at the time that the processing that is envisaged by this new policy or the processing that is envisaged by this new procedure that we're trying to come up with does not, so radically depart from the original purpose to which the data was originally collected for, and B, would pass muster if it was likely to go to the data protection authorities. Now, let's also remember that if we have a doubt in that of anything that goes forward, there are mechanisms specifically within the GDPR itself as well, whereby we could actually ask for a review of the data protection agencies of this and say, hey, we're coming up with this new policy, which may affect en masse all the registrants of the world. we believe these are our thoughts. This is our data protection impact assessment. This is how it affects the rights of the registrants. This is our proposed way of implementation. Could you do a preliminary review of this and let us know if we are correct or not? And at that point, perhaps we could then see where we're going with. But, you know, there is a mechanism for us to go ahead and say, you know, there are elements where you can understand that there are future things that may be so sufficiently linked to that primary original purpose that we could do it. It's just a matter of showing our transparency and going through the process. And in fairness, that's exactly what we should be doing in this EPDP as well. And I think myself and Stephanie and many other people have said this. You know, that's what we need to be doing now, is literally going through that process and seeing where we are.
Thanks, Alan. That was really good. Alan Greenberg?
Thank you very much. Let me try to be a little bit clearer. Of course, we have a policy development process and a way of doing these kind of things. No one was suggesting that we're doing something out of that process. I'm always fascinated by how different the answers from different people are. Stephanie, for instance, in the chat, said we'd need consent or some other authorization, and I think I disagree with that, because all of the things we're looking at are not ones that are voluntary with consent. We're saying these are mandatory. If you want a domain name, it's a necessary part of it. So I'm just looking at the specifics. Would we have to go present this again, as the other Alan just said? Would we have to send out an email to all 180 million registrants saying we've changed our policies, our usage of the data, and please pay attention to that? That's the kind of thing. Hopefully we can make these changes. I'm just not quite sure of how convoluted it would be when we either invent or perhaps discover a new valid use of data. It's an important issue in my mind, because it says exactly how detailed do we have to be as we go through the process we're looking at over the next week or two. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alan. And yes, and Alan Woods' explanation clarified my thinking, gave me a much better understanding of the steps that have to be undertaken as part of that. Mark?
Alan has touched on some
of the... Hey, Mark, get a little closer to the microphone, okay?
As the Alan said, this is why the EPDP feels like it's so high all the time.
Mark, it's Terry. You're still very difficult to hear. Is the microphone plugged in completely to the computer?
No, I will type it in. Hang on.
I've cranked up my sound, and I really want to hear what you have to say, so do the best you can.
I'll try to speak more clearly. I apologize. This is the reason why EPDP feels like it's so high stakes all the time, because we know that it's hard to make policy changes. And I do think that the correct starting assumption is, if you change your purposes, specifically if you're going to change the data collected, that you need a new policy, you have to re-inform the people. Depending on the basis that was used, you might have to collect consent again. I mean, that most of the time we're not using consent as the basis. But also, as the other Alan said, there will be times where the changes are so similar that it will be an easy change. We don't know until we see what exactly the change is, we see what the impact is going to be on creating relevant policy change. For instance, if the purpose was to do direct marketing, I hate to use that example, but if the purpose was to do direct marketing and your initial thing is, I'm doing direct marketing by email, and then later you say, I want to do direct marketing by SMS. Does that require an entirely new EPDP? I think probably not. But you would still have to go through the same thought process to consider whether it did or not. And so always I think our starting assumption is it'll be a difficult, hard change, and then we try to find a way to make it not so hard.
Thank you, Mark. That was helpful. Hadia? Oh, wait, let me turn down my speaker. Go ahead, Adia.
So I just wanted to say that no one is actually asking for more data than what is required by the URS or the UDRP. We are not asking beyond specific. We can be specific, as Margie said, and we link the purpose to this resolution mechanism indicated by ICANN, for example. It's just, you know, I don't see the necessity of spelling out the mechanisms that we have.
Okay. Amr?
Oh, thanks, Kurt. This is Amr. To make this more GDPR compliant, I believe we do need to be very specific in our purposes. And as I said earlier, we need to also map out the processing activities to these purposes, ensure that they are necessary and limited to them. So that's really, I think, the reason why, in terms of making a policy recommendation and a successor to this temp spec GDPR compliant, we do need this granular level of specificity. I don't think the language as is meets that requirement, and I think that the registrar's proposed alternative language on the other Google Doc, not on this one, that provided this specificity. So I hope that sort of answers the question of why I believe we do need this. We do need this to be more specific and not just broader general to dispute resolution processes. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Amr. I'm very happy if someone wants to take the pen and edit this. Otherwise, we can take it on board. I think we have some good comments from Thomas in the chat that alluded to some other dispute resolution mechanisms that exist that should probably be included and at the registry level, and then I think everybody's comment was really helpful. I think Alan Woods gave us really good words to use with regard to data impact assessments or privacy impact assessments that must be undertaken. That would, you know, as Mark said, let us understand pretty fast if this is a big deal or not a big deal. So I think, Alan?
Sorry, yeah, it's just one final thought that occurred to me. I just want to be clear as well, that if we are talking about the potential of future-proofing, our policy that we come up with today, however, or the recommendations for our policy today, still must be specific. I do not agree that we need to have some sort of a future language. However, what I would suggest for us as a EPDP is to make a recommendation that policy development processes going forward, whereby they require personal data or a change of the use of the personal data, should have inbuilt into the process, the actual policy development process, a DPIA as being a basic requirement. So in our policy now, it should be specific and limited to the way we deal with data today. But then our recommendation for a separate effort would be to change the PDP itself.
So we don't have the same discussion every time we talk about one of these data
exactly.
Documents in the spreadsheet.
Exactly.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. I'm just reading the chat here. Okay. Great. Let's we'll capture that. Amend the wording somewhat, but I really take Alan's last comment on board and probably need to include language concerning that. You know, that I think that goes into the initial report bucket, but I'm not going to go backwards in the agenda. If we can go to, let's see what's here. The final cell, which is handling contractual compliance, monitoring requests, audits, and complaints. So this is contractual compliance and We won't be surprised. I think Margie added this is an ICANN purpose. So, Margie, if you can tell us why you added registrars, registries, and third parties, maybe the registrars and registries might respond to that.
I'm sorry, which one are we on?
We're on 4.4.13, which is the contractual compliance monitoring requests. And
Okay.
We had listed that as an ICANN purpose for processing data. And I think, if I read the comments correctly, you've added check marks under registrars and registries and third parties.
Sure. So if you think about the ICANN process, it's not ICANN's not the only party that's involved in a compliance-related inquiry. It starts with, obviously there's audits, right? So that's one category. But there's also the ones that are started by third parties. So if you imagine that third parties come across inaccurate WHOIS data, as an example, there's a form that basically says, submit your inaccurate WHOIS complaint. And so that's where the third-party information comes in, because the third party will only see certain pieces of the data under the current spec. And so in order to confirm understand whether that information is accurate, they need to get access to that record. So that's the third party. ICANN, I believe, sends that information over to the contracted parties. I think it's just the registrar at this point to confirm update the record if it has to do with WHOIS accuracy. So that's for sure the registrar's in that loop. And that's just with the WHOIS type complaint. With any other complaints that relate to contact data, for example, in the audits or whatever, if they want to make sure that a SIC registry is complying with its obligations to display the data or to provide reasonable access or whatever, there's examples of where I see that the registry would be involved in that to the extent that it relates to the contact information that's the subject of the query. So that's why I kind of look at it from every perspective. In the auditing, it's not in a vacuum. ICANN doesn't do it by itself. It has to coordinate with the registrar or the registry, depending upon what's being audited. So if it's escrow, if it's if it's display of port 43 or whatever, RDAP, whatever the protocol is at the time, if it's responding to inquiries through the web-based access, and there's questions about whether the field that's correctly displayed or the accuracy of the field, then in those instances, I can see the registrar or registry being involved.
Are there any comments to that? Especially, from registrars and go ahead, James.
Hi, Kurt. This is James. Hopefully you can hear me okay.
Perfectly.
Good. I'm in a hotel room and don't trust the Wi-Fi. So I think I'm just trying to clarify here because I think I understood Margie's statement a moment ago. But I do question the third party in particular. And actually, I also kind of question the contact party interest in this particular purpose. Those functions are typically between, the compliance functions are typically between us and ICANN. And although third parties can initiate a complaint to ICANN that can kind of kick off a compliance function, and certainly would have an interest in the outcome, I don't know that, for example, the registrar receiving a compliance inquiry, our function is to resolve that with ICANN, not with the third party. So I guess I'm just kind of struggling with how the nexus of really anyone but ICANN applies to this purpose. And I guess I'm looking for others to kind of help me get my mind around this one. Thanks.
Thanks, James. Alan?
Thank you. I guess I may be in the same position. I can see why those other groups, registrars, registries, maybe even in some cases third parties, may need access to the data. But I guess I view compliance as an ICANN purpose. So I think the purpose column is talking about who is creating the need for this data being available to someone, maybe to ICANN, maybe to other parts. But I don't think you need a registrar purpose for them necessarily to have access. That's why we have the whole concept of we have a purpose that requires third parties to ultimately at some point get access to this data. But I don't think it's their purpose. So maybe I'm mistaken, but I'm looking at it as it's an ICANN purpose. Compliance is our responsibility, ICANN's responsibility. And they may be all sorts of bodies that are involved in addressing the compliance issue. Thank you.
Thanks, Milton.
Yes, this is, we're in danger of getting distracted again, Margie. I think that there's this tendency to try to put all things who is into this proceeding. And that is seriously denounced in this particular case in particular. Accuracy is, there's already a who is accuracy policy of ICANN. Accuracy of personal data is a requirement of most forms of privacy regulation. As my understanding is that the temp spec does not affect any existing accuracy requirements of ICANN policies. It does not affect this notification process. It does not affect the ability of people to challenge the accuracy of the data. It does not in any way change anything related to accuracy. So why are we talking about this? I think it's a distraction. And I also agree with what was said by, I think, James about compliance is fundamentally a matter related to the contracted parties and ICANN. If third parties are able to access all who is data and challenge its accuracy, that means we're publishing all who is data, which we already know we can't do anymore. So I don't understand why we're sort of relitigating this at all. I think we just need to drop this.
So before I'm calling on Margie, since we've been around the room once, but I want to let her respond, of course, is that I'm kind of seeing, you know, compliance having a role here to with regard to, say, in this example, who is accuracy and a tool they use for that compliance is the ability to take in complaints from others. So that's not really a third-party purpose either. They're just using the tool that ICANN's provided to help fulfill their purpose. On the registrar part, though, I see that they have to make contacts and things like this, so that might be a purposing process in response to compliance. But anyway, I just wanted to make that comment before starting again. So, Margie, go ahead and reply.
Sure. I mean, and just because there's a third-party element here doesn't mean that the party has access to all who is for everything. It's very narrowly tailored to the specific request. And the only reason why the third party is there is, for example, who is accuracy area, is so that when the compliance is closed, inquiry is closed, that party can receive the data from ICANN saying it's accurate because we reach these fields and this is what the information is. And it's just for that particular inquiry of broad access for everything. So I want to clarify that.
Excuse me. We cannot hear good. A lot of echo. Please kindly try to remove this problem.
How's it now? Okay, we're back in business. Margie, can you say, and can you just briefly repeat what you said, because it was really hard to understand, so but try condense it a bit.
Sure. Closing the loop on the third-party issue. Essentially, when the complaint is closed, if you think about the interaction between ICANN and the party that's complained for a Who Is record, there's a communication back and forth on why something is accurate or inaccurate, and there's a report back to the party that requested the inquiry. So it's a very narrow access. We're not talking about access to or disclosure of an entire database, as Milton suggests. We're talking about a very specific narrow response that relates to that one complaint. So that's what I was thinking about.
Okay, so for our next rounds of discussion, which will be next week on this, think about a way of making that more specific or narrowing it down to see if the group wants to take that, how the group reacts to that. Farzi, closing comment on this topic?
I just wanted to object to Margie be able to raise this issue again next week, because we have been doing this over and over, and Church, I really appreciate that. You are so nice and want to allow everyone to express themselves, but we did this on Appendix C. Now we are going to do it on accuracy. If we want to discuss, let's discuss on the mailing list. It seems like this is Margie's point of view, and it's very contested. We should have it documented. Let's have it on the mailing list instead of giving the platform for another 2 hours of discussion. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Farzi. And I wasn't advocating for having the exact same discussion, but if Margie had a different way of coming up on that, I would listen to that. But thanks very much for that. So I'm going to close this now, go back to the slide deck. And so there's quite a bit here under Appendix A, and the reason we're discussing Appendix A is it has, of all the appendices, it contains the issues that some of the issues that we listed at the top as being important or critical toward being in our initial report. And so I wanted to, there's a fairly extensive set of charter questions associated with this that when we get through it, I think we'll naturally answer, but they have to do with the registrant data that is redacted that we briefly touched upon at one time. I have these issues listed later, so I'm just going to page through the charter questions, which are available for your review, and also briefly, list the issues that Appendix A puts up for us that I think is germane to our initial report. And so the first issue has to do with who must comply with GDPR, and that's covered in sections 2.1 through 2.3 and 3, where, either the processors in the EEA or the controller or the registrant, or in some way it touches the EEA. And then paragraph 3 goes on to discuss whether it's economically feasible for registrars to accommodate different geographies, or they have to operate in a single way. That was an issue that was brought up during the triage portion that
where there were some different differences of opinion. Also, the consent issue was raised in Appendix A, and the timing for when registrars might make consent available. And finally, in Appendix A, under Section 4, there's the issue of disclosure, and then what is reasonable access? So while I understand the comments of many that we're going to talk about access later, I think we need to replace in our policy the language that's here about reasonable access and the debate we've had about what reasonable means and whether, you know, we need to use the term reasonable access or use something else. I don't know if we need to understand what was meant by reasonable access, but we need to replace these paragraphs, this paragraph about reasonable access in Appendix A. So I don't want to talk too long, but we put these items up for discussion in Appendix A, and some have opined on them. So I don't know. Can the support team put the link to the comments? And while we do that, I think we have a couple points of order. So go ahead, Milton.
Yes, my point of order is if we're going to discuss Appendix A, then we have to begin with the beginning of Appendix A, and that is about the redacted data elements. It makes absolutely no sense to talk about access to non-public WHOIS data unless you know what is and what is not. So I hope everybody can agree with that very simple statement of fact. And so if we're going to start with Appendix A, let's have that discussion about redacted data elements that I've been trying to get people to have for the last month.
Thanks, Alan. Did somebody else have their hand up? Go ahead, Alan.
Sorry, I was just going to say, you called it out as a point of order, which, of course, it was not. I was just going to add to it, so I take my hand down until we're ready to discuss if we're going into the detail on this one.
Thanks, Alan. So I'm a little bit stopped here because the first sets of items to be discussed are not redacted items, but I wonder. So Milton, you know, there's a big part of me that said we should talk about the redacted items, and then there's another part of me that says we haven't settled what the data is yet. So should we talk about the redacted items? So do you think that's a correct thought, or do you think we can talk about data redaction before we settle the data elements? Go ahead, Milton.
Yes, the part of you that says we need to settle the data elements first is correct. So I hope that you two don't get into a fight with each other. And if you do, the first one wins. We have to continue, I think, with Mrs. Matrix, which is where we were going a meeting or two ago, where we're deciding what data is actually grounded in a purpose. And, again, once we've settled that, then we can get to access. But some people are pushing us towards Appendix A, and I was hoping that they were not diverting us from that prior discussion. But if they succeed in doing that, at least when we talk about Appendix A, we should talk first about redaction. But I totally agree. We should not be talking about redaction until we know what the data elements are.
Okay, good. Thank you. Caboose?
So I was convinced by the last statement from Milton, so I don't need to hear anymore. Thank you.
Great. So notwithstanding Milton's comment, which I find to be accurate, I think there's also policy issues in Appendix A that will require our attention for the initial report. And I wanted to have a brief discussion about that amongst this group, as it was requested by others, so that comment can continue on this comment section. And these have to do with these things here. So you've seen this before because it's been in previous slides and posted for comment. Yes, Mark, go ahead.
I just had to comment on Milton's statement of, because I disagree with it, and my reasoning for disagreeing with it, really, think about it from a data processing perspective. If I'm developing a system that says, I shall process data of type A in one and data of type B in another fashion, I do not need to know a priori full enumerated set of data type A and data type B. So I understand where he's coming from, but just as a statement of point, which is what he's saying,
I missed your last sentence. As a matter of truth, what?
I don't think it's actually factual.
Okay, thanks. Cavus?
Yes, I understand few points were left to be discussed on the mailing list. Does the Secretariat have any record of those items which were left to be discussed at mailing list, which I don't agree, nevertheless, if you want to. But the question is that, does any of those items have any policy issues that need to be included in the preliminary reports or not? If yes, then we have to have some results of that mailing list. Because up to now, I have not seen any result of any group from the mailing list. The people exchange ideas with each other, but there is no area or there is no one to get a summary of all of those and bring back the result of those exchange of issues. So whenever we want to just dispose of anything, we just send it to the mailing list. But there is no record whether they are followed, they are not followed, what is the result, and so on and so forth. So we leave it in your hand to see whether those issues which left to the mailing list, we have a record, and whether there is any of them, does any of them have any policy, that should be included in the initial report. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Caitlin or Marika, could you take an action and make an index of all the different Google Docs and items on the wiki pages that capture all the discussion on all these topics and make that available? I think that'd be helpful to me too, because when I'm looking for something, I often wind up hunting around a little bit. So we sort of have a library of those things. Mark, is that a previous hand? Yep, thanks. There's a set of issues in Appendix A to where some have made comments, and if Steph could put the link in down here, I think that'd be good, but it'd be better to view what these issues are. So the first has to do with the identification of legal persons versus natural persons, persons, and how the EDPB asks us to handle those and how that affects our discussion of especially technical and administrative contacts. There's the issue of redaction of data, and and some on this, in the triage, some have advocated for additional fields to be redacted, and some have called for some fields to be not redacted. So there is passion for or interest in changing the list of redacted data in Appendix A. The third has to do with, again, administrative and technical contacts, and whether email address is personal information, even if it's with a company email. One has to do with having appropriate logging mechanisms. And then finally on this chart, there's the issue of, you know, what is meant by reasonable access. And if you go back to the charter questions, you'll see that, you know, the charter questions are, you know, do we intend to adopt this language of reasonable access? And if we do, what the heck does reasonable mean? And if we don't, then what's the replacement language? So for this, in a previous meeting, we requested that you go to that link and comment on these various issues, so that we have an understanding of the different positions or additional necessary information, so that we can discuss these when they come up. So the action is to engage on this, but first, this was quite a few slides, but it was to get Appendix A, you know, formally on the table, and solicit any initial comments about how this should be discussed or what our final deliverable might look like. Caboose?
Yes, with respect to the last one, reasonable, use of reasonable before access. The discussion given reasonable requirement and so on and so forth, I don't think that are the same thing. They are two different things. My suggestion would be we get rid of the reasonable and we put another adjective in front of access, whether required access, adequate access, minimum access, but not reasonable. Because this reasonable, we have discussed it elsewhere. We have discussed it in the CCWG Workstream 2 jurisdiction. Hours and hours, and there was no agreement. And at the end, IPC or chair of the IPC put something in that, and people by exhaustion, they have agreed. Consortium by exhaustion. So I suggest that we get rid of the reasonable and have some other term, such as required access or adequate access or minimum access or nothing, but not reasonable. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. Does everybody feel that they have sufficient information in order to, you know, open up this page and make comments to it? I'm sorry, I saw when I read some of the comments. So the page was, if staff could put the link in again. There you go. Thanks, Marika. So a few meetings ago, we asked that even though we hadn't discussed this at all yet or introduced the material, that we make comments on it. So given the slide content here, which includes the charter questions and the topics as listed out this way, I'd like people to take some time and make comments to this. We have some from a couple of the groups here, but not all of them. Right, Cavus.
Yes, when we talk about reasonable, some things or some issues in views of some people, they are reasonable, but in the views of other people, they are not reasonable. So there's the problem of reasonable. So we have to find a way to get out of this dilemma. This reasonable and sometimes appropriate, obviously, and some of these things are disturbing. And at the very beginning, I raised all of these questions. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you that we need to reword that. Mark?
Can you hear me now?
Oh, man, it's so much better.
Okay, I just wanted to test my new microphone. That's all I had to say.
So, I don't know. So, Ashley suggested that, so please read, Mark. So, Ashley recommended that maybe someone from the BC or IPC could introduce some of their thoughts. That would be fine if it can be done in, say, 5 minutes' time. So perhaps hitting the key points, but it'd have to be fairly brief, and I don't know if it'd be, to the extent it would be helpful, it'd be great. Milton?
Yeah, there's some kind of strange process going on here, but I thought I had made the point that we cannot discuss access to non-public WHOIS data until we know what the data is and what is public and what is non-public. And here we are having a discussion of access to these data elements that we don't even know, and we don't know what's public and non-public. Why is this happening? Did I miss something in the discussion? It seemed like you agreed with me, Kurt, that there was a logical order to the discussion of these elements. Are we discussing what we're going to discuss when we're in Los Angeles, or are we having this discussion in a real sense? I'm just completely lost here.
Thanks, Milton. I think there's several topics in Appendix A. Other than redaction that require discussion, that where redaction isn't necessarily on the critical path. And so what...
You can say redaction is not on the critical path when you're talking about access to non-public WHOIS data, and redaction tells you what's public and what's non-public. How can you say that?
I wasn't referring to access. I was referring to some of these other things that are in Appendix A. The order in which they're listed in these category of issues indicate their priority. So I think it's still helpful to consider these other issues that aren't specifically accessed and comment on those. I also think that there's some sort of placeholder that will be about access that we're going to have to discuss, and it's all in this section. I don't disagree with your ordering, but there's progress that can be made in preparation for our discussion. Caboose? Caboose, did you want to say something?
Yes, the issue of before discussing and deciding or determining the data, we should not talk about the access and so on and so forth, and we should not talk about these things at all at this stage. Nevertheless, no matter, still there will be some data. If there is some data, then we should discuss that. And if we cannot discuss it at all here by everybody, so flag it up and then say that this is a matter to be discussed. Take it as a follow-up action, as a pending item that needs to be discussed. But we should not raise it again to discuss it or not discuss it. Thank you.
Thanks. Mark?
I have to raise a point that... I tried to address this when I was in my dungeon a few minutes ago, and no one could understand me. But I really reject the idea that we must define all data elements to be redacted before we can talk about the concept of reasonable access. And there are a couple reasons for this, that reasonable access is not the specificity of the, how the access works. It's a term that is discussed in the temp spec. So it is, you know, it can be discussed even though there are gating issues. But the real reason is that in data processing, we're going to talk about categories of things, and we don't need to know every single enumerated item in each category before we talk about how we process the categories. I understand that you could proceed down the path that Milton is advocating. You could probably make it work. It's not how I would design a complex system. I think it's an inferior approach. And so I think we're just going to have to disagree on this, and I'm going to continue to assert my opinion that we can, in fact, talk about reasonable access in a way that is not gated by the charter.
Go ahead, James. Thanks, Mark.
Hi, thanks, Kurt. James speaking. And so I know we're running out of time here. I'd like to pick up on Mark's proposal that we just kind of agree to disagree, but do so in a way that parks or defers the substantive discussions of access. I keep feeling like we just continue to get wrapped around the axle on this issue. And, you know, regardless of whether we, you know, substantively believe it's part of our discussion or not, it is just outside of the boundaries of our time constraints. And I think, you know, it's unfortunately, just not something we can take on in the scope of the time that we have, and I think that that's one of the reasons why the GNSO Council designed the charter the way they did. So I think we just need to kind of note it, flag it, and move on. Thanks.
Kurt, if you're talking, you're still muted.
Great, thanks. Thanks, Terry. So I take these comments on board, and my only comment with regard to going through the charter questions, I think that, you know, in my mind, and maybe I need to draw this more vividly, but in my mind, we're going through the charter questions because, you know, the first charter question is about the purpose of data. So we're marching through that matrix that's, you know, necessary in order to answer that and the ensuing three charter questions there. And we have the data matrix that is necessary to answering the next three charter questions there. So at the top of this, we listed the questions having to do with Appendix A. So I understand that we haven't started with one and focused completely on that without talking about other things. But anyway, I'll have to think about that. But the path we're marching down is designed to answer the charter questions. So I'll try to do better of linking those and making sure that these are the charter questions we're trying to answer, and we'll take any suggestions offline about how to do that better. Mark, is that a previous hand? Yeah, thanks. So
it's previous hands.
That's okay. So can I call on staff to not only wrap but indicate when and where we're going to get together next week?
Hi, Kurt. This is Caitlin. So I've captured 6 action items in this conversation. The first action item is for ICANN support staff to distribute Thomas and Farzana's matrix following this call. The second action item is for ICANN support staff to capture Alex's proposed methodology and distribute via email. And as a reminder, I think Alex's methodology was to proceed with, instead of deciding if an X should be placed on the purposes matrix, we should move forward with using the updated registrar text on the purposes designated for registrars and give registries an opportunity or homework to draft purposes for their text, or text for their purposes, rather, for their columns for processing. And if I recall, Christina did mention that they would help with doing that. Action item three is to reach out to ICANN.org and note that there was a request for active participation during the face-to-face from the ICANN.org liaisons and possibly ICANN compliance. Action item four is for the leadership team to further refine the face-to-face agenda based on today's feedback from the EPDP team. Action item five is for the leadership team to attempt to redraft section 4.4.12, which is the dispute resolution procedures like on purpose, based on today's feedback. And the last action item is for the ICANN support team to create an index of all of the Google Docs and other documents the team has been using, so it'll be easier to find and search for those when necessary. And as a reminder, our face-to-face meeting will begin on Monday, and it will be in the ICANN offices. It'll be starting at 8:30 local time. Thank you, Kurt.
Yep, thanks, Caitlin. And the only tweak I have to that is, you know, the language that Alan Wood suggested is to make sure that sort of universal language for our work and not just for that element. Go ahead, Alan.
Thank you. Before we adjourn, I just wanted to make sure, I may be behind on my email, but has a detailed agenda been sent out yet for the face-to-face, and specifically starting and ending times, and if there are any dinners planned? If there's an email, just point me to it, but we really need that. Some of us have other arrangements we have to make in addition to this meeting.
Caitlin, can you take that one? Or maybe Terry?
Yes. Thanks, Kurt. I can take that one. Thanks for the question, Alan. If I remember correctly, Kurt did distribute the detailed agenda, so the email came from Kurt to the EPDP team, and that came through yesterday. However, we can go ahead and resend that to put it at the top of everyone's inbox. In addition, Terry sent out a logistics document which goes through the times for meals and generally when people are supposed to report to the ICANN offices. It includes information on the dinner and the cocktail reception on Sunday. But we can go ahead, when I distribute Thomas and Farzana's matrix, we can also include those two documents right after this meeting so that everyone has them.
Yeah, I have it now. I presume other people do as well. I was offline all yesterday, but I see it now. Thank you.
Great, Alan. Thanks, Caboose.
Yes, since I am attending the meeting remotely for half of the meeting, I would appreciate if this time it be also indicated in UTC. Thank you.
Thanks. We'll take care of that.
Kurt, I can just note that right now. Thank you, Caboose. For UTC time, on Monday the start time is 15:30.
Follow up with an email, okay, Caitlin? We'll just mark up the agenda and include a version, a column with UTC. And let me note that there's the logistics, all the ancillary functions and timing will be added to the wiki agenda page. All right, cool. So if that's I want everybody to have a safe trip. I only have to come about 50 miles, but I know a lot of you are coming further and sacrificing a good part of your weekend and a good part of your work week. So I appreciate that, and we'll see you there. So have a safe trip, and take care, everyone.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Operator, if you could please stop all recordings. To everyone else, please remember to disconnect all remaining lines. Safe travel to those going to LA, and have a wonderful rest of your day.